Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So you heard the latest from Libya on the news headlines there. And across the wire just a minute ago, the Russian head of the World Chess Federation says that he spoke with Muammar Gaddafi by telephone and said he was, quote, alive and well and still in Tripoli. They've been friends for years, apparently. So that's not the way we expected to get our news about the whereabouts of Muammar Gaddafi, but it comes from the head of the World Chess Federation in Russia, who says he spoke with Muammar Gaddafi by telephone and that he's alive and well and still in Tripoli. So what a difference a day can make. Yesterday, it seemed that Gaddafi's rule in Libya would be over in a matter of days, if not hours, if he had not left Tripoli already. Two of his sons, Saif and Mohammed, were said to have been captured by rebel forces who were said to have taken control of the capital city of Tripoli. Now Mohammed escaped house arrest. Maybe you heard that. Bombing and artillery fire can be heard outside of Gaddafi's compound this morning. And Saif spoke to foreign journalists at the Gaddafi-held Rixos Hotel late last night.
We are here. This is our country. This is our country. These are our people, and we live here and we die here, and we are going to win.
So safe is safe, and it's not clear if he was ever in rebel custody, but he certainly isn't now. Opposition fighters have reportedly started to set up an office in Tripoli for a transitional government. The city is divided, so that progress is clear. Last week, they were talking about the country being divided. Now the city, the capital, is divided. But even if Gaddafi does fall and a rebel victory is declared in this NATO-backed uprising, Libya's future is still difficult to predict. So joining me now is Mark Quarterman, Senior Advisor and Director of the Program on Crisis, Conflict, and Cooperation at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was on the program just a few weeks ago to talk about Libya, such as it was 3 weeks ago, and he's back today for a much-needed update as we try to figure out not only how Gaddafi will fall, but what will happen next with that very daunting set of unknowns. So, Mark, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
What happened between yesterday and today? Was this a media mistake? Were the rebels giving misinformation? Or did the tide of the battle simply change overnight?
Well, I think as regards the continued fighting in Tripoli, there was probably a miscalculation or a bit of exuberance on the part of the rebels that they communicated to the media. You know, a regime like Gaddafi's doesn't just collapse and go away. And it's clear that they're continuing to fight, but it's also clear, as you pointed out, that they no longer control Libya. They might control a part of Tripoli, but that's it. The post-Gaddafi era, in many ways, has begun.
Rebel leaders said just last hour that they have control of 85% of Tripoli. 85%. Reporters and TV anchors have been skeptical of that claim. It sounds like you are too.
It's going to be very hard to have a broad sense of exactly what's going on, especially as there's kind of street to street and house to house fighting in certain parts of Tripoli. I think the broader concern is to get Gaddafi out one way or another, to end this regime and restore a degree of stability to Libya. But I think that there's no question but that the Gaddafi regime, as it was, no longer exists.
Now, we just have this crossing the wire now from The Hague, which is that the International Criminal Court prosecutor says he is committed to helping Libyan rebel authorities bring justice to the country. I presume that's after they take full control. These comments come a day after an apparent miscommunication between the court and the rebels led him to wrongly announce that rebels had captured Muammar Gaddafi's son, Saif. But if that was an embarrassment for the International Criminal Court, Luis Moreno Ocampo is still reaffirming today that when the time comes, the International Criminal Court is going to help Libyan rebel authorities bring justice to the country. What do you think that means specifically? Does that mean we're going to see the trial of Muammar Gaddafi?
Well, you might recall that Security Council Resolution 1970, the first resolution on Libya, referred the matter to the International Criminal Court. The prosecutor's office began a preliminary investigation and determined that there was evidence that the regime might have carried out crimes against humanity, and issued arrest warrants for four officials, including Muammar Gaddafi and his son Saif. It's hard to know exactly what happened in this set of murky communications between the rebels and the prosecutor. But at a certain point, if those four officials are captured, the Libyan authorities, the new Libyan authorities, would have an obligation under the Security Council resolution to hand over those four officials to the International Criminal Court in keeping with the arrest warrants. The key issue now is in this end game in Libya, we're in a very chaotic situation.
We can see smoke rising over the capital now. I'm looking at a TV monitor, and a lot of thick black smoke rising over Tripoli at this moment.
That's right. And I think that while the International Criminal Court is an important thing, and I'm a strong believer in international justice, it's not the key issue, of course, that the Libyan opposition, the rebels, are dealing with. They're trying to stabilize the country. They need, even as they continue to fight in Tripoli, to establish their rule across, or at least a transitional authority, across Libya to ensure law and order and to make sure that needed government services continue, like keeping the lights on and the water flowing.
A problem that was in Iraq after Saddam fell.
Absolutely. You know, there are two cautionary tales here that we want to avoid. One is Iraq. Now, and we have to admit, that was a foreign power invading and a foreign occupation. But having said that, the lack of law and order in the immediate aftermath of the fall of Saddam Hussein led to serious breakdowns that then made it difficult to establish order and move to the next stage in Iraq. Kosovo is a place to think about, too, where there were a number of revenge and retaliation killings. There was retaliation violence that occurred in the aftermath of Serbia pulling out. And that's something else that the Transitional National Council in Libya and the rebels need to avoid.
Mark Quarterman from the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And we can take your phone calls on Libya if you have any, as we just try to get informed about what's going on and what it means. You certainly can offer your opinions, as always, and your questions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And did you know we have a comments page for every segment we do on the show? So you can go to our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and ask a question there or keep the conversation going there. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or the phones are open, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I want to ask you about NATO's role. What kind of role is NATO playing today as this fight intensifies? What kind of role are U.S. aircraft and U.S. pilots playing?
NATO has said that they will continue their operation as long as the Gaddafi forces continue to attack civilians. And by all accounts, they've played a fundamental role in providing space for the rebels to organize themselves and take the fight to Tripoli. The U.S. has not flown combat missions. As U.S. officials have said, they have the U.S. has provided unique assets that only it has to support the military operation. But European countries have flown the overwhelming bulk of the combat missions, with some help from Arab states and from Turkey.
And about NATO, when you were on this program about 3 weeks ago, you talked about how local councils led by the rebels are taking care of infrastructure and governance issues all over Libya in the towns and cities that they control as a pretty good sign. Here's a clip of what you said on this show earlier this summer.
because the civil war has entered what seems to be a prolonged stalemate, we might be able to make lemonade out of these lemons by taking the time to provide assistance to the TNC and to other rebel groups to get to know them better, to increase capacities in places that have been liberated from the Gaddafi regime, so that they will be more ready, more effective when the regime, I believe, inevitably falls.
So there are two things there that I want to follow up on, and that was August 3rd. You were by no means the only person predicting a prolonged stalemate at that time. So are you shocked? And if so, why do you think you and so many Libya experts got it wrong in terms of how quickly the rebels could move into Tripoli?
Well, thanks for reminding me of my my previous statements, Brian. No, it is shocking. As recently as even a couple of weeks ago now, the rebels seemed to be incapable of taking and holding territory. They've been depicted by so many as being a ragtag bunch, and they seem just that. I think that a number of us, and probably also the Gaddafi regime, were caught by surprise by the audacious move to Tripoli, and also by the organization within Tripoli. The initial uprising in Tripoli was carried out by rebels in Tripoli, from Tripoli, and not those from the outside, in coordination with those from the outside who carried out a three-pronged attack. It's impressive and audacious and incredibly surprising.
So since one of the biggest issues going forward is unity, and I know you talked about that here on August 3rd too, is it a really positive sign that rebels from Tripoli have been joined by rebels outside Tripoli because it's an indication that they're going to be able to work together?
It is a real sign of hope, because one of the problems, and I think I pointed this out a few weeks ago too, is the Transitional National Council that's been ruling in the East is largely made up of Easterners. And so the watchword now really needs to be inclusiveness. As they think about next steps of setting up a transitional authority as a prelude to drafting a constitution, having elections at some time in the future, the TNC from the East needs to be inclusive of the people from the West. The fact that the rebels were in contact with each other is a very good thing, although the rebels who were fighting, both those who were in Tripoli and those who were pressing into Tripoli from the outside, were Westerners. The fighting that's been carried out in Libya has largely been carried out by people from their areas fighting in their areas. So there's a really strong need now, not just for the fighters to come together, but for the civilians to come together and establish a more national transitional authority.
You know, I mentioned before the news, for people who are listening about 20 minutes ago, that the Wall Street Journal editorial page today is openly praising the U.S. and NATO intervention in Libya, with Gaddafi probably about to fall. You know, this is Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal editorial page, and it praises President Obama for intervening in, quote, a victory for freedom and U.S. national interests, unquote, and praises NATO, headed by the U.S., for showing it is willing to finish a military operation that it starts. And it criticizes Republican presidential hopefuls who won't celebrate the impending victory, which is very interesting considering the source. Does the Journal represent one strain of conservative thinking versus another in the U.S. about Libya?
Well, I have to say I'm more expert on issues outside our borders than inside, but I think that they're... has been a strong interest among many who've been labeled as neocons in pushing forward with support, aggressive support for the Arab Spring, and especially aggressive military support in Libya and possibly in Syria.
The same wing that wanted the U.S. to go in to Iraq originally, under the theory that toppling a dictator and launching a democracy process is good for the U.S. in the long run, even going back to the 90s, maybe the same group that was pro-intervention in Serbia, and Kosovo, certainly conservatives were split on that Clinton administration intervention. That's the philosophy?
That's right. That's exactly right. Because then there are other conservatives who are more suspicious of international interventions, and we've been hearing from them as well. I think that one interesting thing about the Arab Spring and about these interventions is, or potential interventions, is they confound ideological lines here in the United States. On the left as well, there are those from a strong peace camp who were extremely opposed to any sort of intervention in Libya, and those liberal internationalists who believe that the U.S. needs to be on the side of democracy forces, but also who believe that the U.S. can't stand aside in the face of potential humanitarian catastrophe.
Right. And there's certainly a lot of skepticism about this intervention on the left, as you mentioned, people not wanting the president to do this unilaterally, thought Congress should have had a say more than it did, and just not wanting the action, U.S. going out bombing more places. Do you agree, though, with the Wall Street Journal editorial page that this war has been in the U.S. national interests, as they put it? Because a lot of people have trouble identifying any specific U.S. national interests.
Well, I think President Obama characterized it in a way that I would agree with when he said that this is not a vital interest of the United States. This is in his speech at the National Defense University in the aftermath of the start of the military campaign, where he said that this is not a vital interest, but there is an interest in making sure that we no longer stand aside when people are threatened with humanitarian catastrophe, and that the last thing he wanted to do was to see pictures afterwards and think, well, maybe we could have stopped it. But the other thing the U.S. did was it worked with its allies, who have a much more fundamental interest, European countries in Libya, to have them take the lead on this issue. The leading from behind, I think, isn't just a slogan. It's actually a rather deft way of ensuring that action happens, but ensuring that those who have the interest take action commensurate with their interests. And so we had the Europeans flying the combat sorties. We had a number of Arab countries, the Qatar, United Arab Emirates, providing funds to the Transitional National Council, among others.
We're almost out of time with Mark Quarterman from the Center for Strategic and International Studies as we talk about the fast-moving events in Libya and what they mean. Here's a really interesting question before you go that Sebastian from Stanford posted on our comments page. And it reminds me that the last time you were on earlier this month, it was right after General Yunus was assassinated, the military commander for the rebels. And that was when you and everybody seemed to be saying, well, the rebels, you know, have their internal problems, too. And so this is probably going to be a long standoff between the rebels and Gaddafi forces. But Sebastian from Stanford asks, does the rebels' rapid advance have anything to do with the killing of that general that was suspected of feeding information to Gaddafi?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm afraid I don't have the answer to that. But I think that we'll find out a lot of things in the coming weeks, months, and years as the facts in this very murky situation make themselves more apparent.
And this just in from Brussels, the European Union's foreign policy chief says the 27-nation bloc is preparing to unfreeze Libyan assets quickly once the United Nations gives its approval. So just more and more indications that the Gaddafi administration is about to fall. But we did have that that note just as you were coming on, the head of the World Chess Federation, who's Russian, saying that he spoke to Gaddafi on the phone and that he's alive and well in Tripoli. Do you take that at face value?
Well, I think that Muammar Gaddafi's rule was characterized by bizarre actions, and that the end game of his rule seems to be to continue to show us a number of bizarre activities, including his son Saif taking reporters on a tour of Tripoli, and Muammar Gaddafi's one phone call seeming to be with a head of a chess federation.
They're a few moves away from checkmate, it looks like. Mark Quarterman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, something very serious, and we'll take your calls with your experiences or your kids' experiences on the binge drinking problem on college campuses. And then Spotify comes to America, the cloud computing way to listen to music for pay or for free. Is it good for your ears? And is it fair to musicians? Stay with us.